Hello everyone, this is Ashish. Welcome back to Momentum Podcast. Now, if you think that I'm a little bit tired right now, it's because I am. And I am more than a little bit tired, but I'll do my best to keep the energy in my voice. It's been a long day. It is 12 o'clock at night right now, but 9 o'clock in the morning, I had an Art of Speaking reunion. And then after that, I recorded one podcast that you saw last week. And after that, went out, did some shopping. It's a grocery one, not like bought clothes and all. You have been seeing these clothes for the past 2 years. And then had telephonic consultancy sessions and then auto speaking. And then this is again, I'm recording it. So just saying that, it's not like the energy is going to drop. You know, I love to speak. So today we are going to talk about gaming. Now, that's a big part of my past, and I think that there are few things to be learned out of games. And the way we demonize games, we most of the time, a lot of us want to play games, but our parents would be saying that don't play games, you should be studying. But there are a lot of things that are much worse than games that you would be doing, and gaming is actually in the better side. Even if you do not want to be a professional gamer, if you want to be a professional gamer, then that's all you do. But even if you're a casual gamer, I think it is not a bad thing. It teaches a lot of things, and I think parents should be happy that their kids are playing games and not watching Big Boss. So I'll just get into the brief history of my gaming. And you know how Momentum Podcast goes, we just have a good time over here, talk, maybe have a cup of coffee and just discuss. That's how our Sundays go, and that's why our Sundays are so fun. Okay, so I first saw a video game actually because of my father. So my father can't blame me because of playing so much games growing up. So my father is a mechanical engineer. He joined Heavy Engineering Corporation as a mechanical engineer. Initially, he was working in foundry and forge, you know, melting pieces of metal and then forging it or casting it. And later on, it was the boom of the internet age. So we are talking about 1980s. So it was somewhere 1985 or so. And at that time, they did not have like computer science engineers. They had like mechanical, civil, electrical done. And computer science was just trying to like test the waters, right? I think that was around the time when Steve Jobs was working with Apple, Bill Gates was working with his own Microsoft, and Intel was pretty much ahead. So that was what was going on in America. But in India, barely scratching the surface, right? So they were just asking almost every other engineer who joins a company, like, do you want to get into like computer science and all? And my father said that, I do not have to stay near a furnace. I can be in like an air conditioner room. I do not know if the office rooms were air conditioned back then, but I can be in a room under a fan. Sign me up. And I do not know if that's exactly what happened, but he transitioned from mechanical engineering to computer science engineering. And basically started learning. That's what people used to do back then in the 1980s. Just take programming languages. I think C++ was big. And then there were a few softwares. I heard the names COBOL. I was never into computer science engineering. I got straight to mechanical. Stuck to it. But my father got into these computer science programming softwares. And then made a career out of it for the next 30 years. That's what he was doing. But when you're talking about 1999, 2000, so there were these festivals, right? Annual festival, we call it Vishwakarma Puja. And in that, you can bring your family to your office and show them machines. And in those, computers were the machine as well. So they used to like, literally, what do you call it? Like worship your machines. That's Vishwakarma Puja. Vishwakarma is the god of machines. Pretty cool. Like, we have a god of machines. I don't think that any other religion has it. So computers are machines. So you put like Tilak and Tikka on it. And move some incense stick and like, yeah, treat your machine like a god. You need to do that to your MacBooks as well. So we used to go over there, I think it's some particular day in September, I'm forgetting it, and that's what we did. Like, all the kids used to play games on the computer, and in those days the games that were out there was Dave. I never played Mario, but there was Prince. Later I found out there were two different princes. One was just Prince, and then that became so successful, later came Prince Shadow and the Fire, I guess. Yeah, I think that is a huge reason why one of my podcasts, or a podcast in which I'm a co-host, is Talk and Fire. Maybe that's the reason. Okay, so I loved it. Instantaneously fell in love with the video games. It was like 8-bit video game back then, but I still used to love it a lot. And whenever I got the opportunity, and unfortunately I got opportunity once a year, so that's Vishwakarma Puja, always cherish that day. And later on, like, a cousin of mine who just lived next door got a computer, a second-hand computer, and those games came like 100 meters away from me, and I just every now and then like pleaded them, like, let me play an hour, and that's it. And then I had to wait for I think 6-7 years until I got a hold of those cassette video games. So I do not know if Generation Z kids will even understand what I'm talking about, because those games are available easily on your cell phone for free and you still won't play it. And we had to pay, I still remember, 50 rupees cassettes, and you get a chip. It's basically a chip. The outer plastic cover is just for you to hold it, kind of. Even if you throw the cover, the chip will still stick in. You might get a little bit shock, right? Because it's all like bare. If you are barefoot, you'll get a shock, but it works. You just plug a chip, right? How many of you guys can relate with me? How many of you guys have played that video game? Let me know down in the comment section. It's so interesting. So I played a few games like Mario, Contra, and there were a bunch of other games. I think one of my favorites was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So there were like 4 characters and you play. It's fine. It's awesome. They made different versions of the same game as well. I think one game was Street something, in which one character was Cody. I'm going to place it over here, man. I still every now and then go to YouTube and just watch a walkthrough of that. There's so much nostalgia over there. I love those games. And then there was one game in which there was a ninja, I think. Yeah, that was a ninja. And then all the games mostly have the same story. Someone picks your girl and then you have to save her. Like, talk about objectification over there. Like, gender equality going down the drain in those video games. Like, Mario had the same, like, princess is in another castle. That happened like 10 times, princess in another castle. So that was like, if you want to know the timeline, I would say 2002, 2003, yeah, maybe 2005 as well. I'm not really that sure, but 2005 definitely. And then I had to wait like few more years, 4-5 more years, and this was 2008 when I finally got a hold of a real computer in my house. And that's when the first game I finished was Hitman, Silent Assassin. And that's where the 47 in Talk 4712 comes from. That's the code name of the main protagonist, the bald guy who kills a lot of people. And that was the first game that I finished. Like, I saw the credits ending, and that was a long game. I think there were like 20 or so level, kind of short. A freaking fantastic, man, because you go to different countries. I still remember the main first level happens in Sicily, so you go to Italy, and by the end of it you are in Moscow, so you are in Russia. So that's the thing that I'm talking about. And along the way you go to India. I think there were few levels in Pakistan as well, few in Arabic countries, and you make your way to India. And that's the thing about Hitman. Now, Hitman is all remastered and new trilogy of Hitman game. And even in that, like, you'll be going in different countries. Like, you'll in the latest ones, you'll be going in China, you'll be going in Germany, England, and lot of places. And one in Hitman 2 in the new trilogy. So they fucked up with the naming because they are two Hitman 2s. So one was that Silent Assassin, and then they have one in which the 47 comes to Mumbai. Mumbai, man, what the fuck, man? I'm in India. I'm an Indian. I should be saying Mumbai, and better yet, Bombay. Okay, so that's Hitman, and that's what I was talking about. That these video games showed me the world before I got to see it in reality. So I've already seen France, and I've seen France in 18th century because of Assassin's Creed Unity. I've kind of seen it. Like, you can say, oh, it's never the same thing, but it's better than watching television. I'm actually moving in 3D space. I can go wherever I want. It's an open world. I can explore. So I know those places even without visiting. Now, tell me that does not have an additional value. Now, I played another sequel of games like Grand Theft Auto. So the first Grand Theft Auto that I played was Vice City. And that was basically, Vice City is a replica of Miami. And so far, I've not even gone to Miami so far, but I kind of know it. Like, I kind of understand what the world is going to be. I'll share some stories with you. And then the next one was GTA 3. GTA 3 came before Vice City, but I played it afterwards. And that is in Liberty City, which is a replica of New York City. And I've still not gone to New York City, but I can imagine. And San Andreas is made in three different cities: Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Now, I've not gone to Las Vegas and San Francisco as well, but I have been to Los Angeles. It's bloody same. Like, I sometimes felt in Los Angeles that I'm in GTA 5 or I'm in San Andreas. I'm telling you, man, they made that city in a way that it really is. Down to the vehicles, down to the roads, a lot of times down to the entire, like, architecture. A lot of the buildings will be similar as well. So even if a kid who never got the opportunity to visit these places kind of got the experience of being over there. Now, also, to some extent, like, what is the environment going to be like? And when I was playing these games, I kind of thought that the real thing is going to be much different. And obviously, like, in reality, nobody just hijacks a car and just shoots a person in the street. That does not happen most of the time. But kind of the ambience is very similar. So you get to experience things that you would not normally experience if you're just watching some, what are these, garbage the reality shows, man. Fuck those. Those are stupid. Anybody who watches that? I have my eyebrows raised. Okay. Every now and then I'm in a conversation. Hey, man, this conversation is very interesting. Then that person poops out that he or she watches this XYZ Big Brothers or some shit. And I said, okay, bye. See you. But video games are always going to help you to learn more. Like, video games are challenges. You cannot sit on your ass while you're eating popcorn or eating a burger and enjoy a video game. No, sir. Well, you can do that on YouTube if you're watching walkthroughs and all, but even then you'll be compelled. For example, these video games on World Wars, right? I think the first one that I played was Wolfenstein. And that was an old Wolfenstein. I think it was 8-bit one. And that kind of, like, it is a parallel universe, but kind of gave me the idea of what Nazi Germany was like. I saw the swastikas. Again, I'm Indian, so I should be saying swastika. No, swastik. You messed this up because when you watch a documentary on Hitler, on World War II, you always hear swastikas. But it's swastik. That's Indian. We put swastik all around in Diwalis, right? My mother used to put that. And by the way, it's good that we don't care, man. Indians don't care what Nazi Germany did and made that symbol brutal. We are still going to have fun in Diwalis putting that swastik symbol, right? Okay, that's a good thing. Everywhere else in this world, that's kind of taboo. Like, you cannot be putting that symbol on your entrance door. But we don't care. That's our culture. That's in our culture for thousands of years. Why would we care, man? What a guy with a silly mustache did for 16 years or so. Okay, coming back to the point. So, there were games which taught me about the history more than my history books. Obviously, the Assassin's Creed franchise, and you get to see the Renaissance in its blood and bone. Like, you get to live that. You understand what happened. Or this Assassin's Creed, the second part, in which Ezio was there, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, you got to see Rome just after the plague. So when the COVID situation happened, you remember Anshuman made a picture, I'm going to put it over here. That's what we saw in Assassin's Creed all around, because that was a time where people were plagued, and there were doctors in that kind of uniform. That was like, what do you call it? Personal protective equipment, right? PPE. I'm not sure if the full form was correct. But I got to see that. Now you'd say, what then? Like, what's the use of nothing? Like, what's the use of living? What's the use of traveling? I got to know more about the world that I was born in through these video games. And that's only a part of what's good about video games. Now, I'm going to keep on going. So, apart from, let us say, the Renaissance that we saw, or Altair's part, where we saw the Crusades in the 12th century, and we were thrown in Jerusalem, and we get to know what this part of the world looks like or used to look like 1,000 years ago. And other than that, like all the Assassin's Creed, for example, Assassin's Creed 3 was made in American Revolution, so we got to see that. Assassin's Creed Unity was made in French Revolution, so I got to learn what is French Revolution. And they're not going to mess around with the history either. They are going to have real life people. The real life people are going to be characters in the game. And you are either going to be playing for or against that character a lot of times. So that's awesome. For example, I'm pretty sure that Leonardo da Vinci, right? Now it always comes like Leonardo DiCaprio. Okay, so he was a character in Assassin's Creed 2. Benjamin, right? Benjamin Franklin was a character in Assassin's Creed 3. And they're like lot of historic characters who are actually, you get to see the first president of America, what's his name? Washington in Assassin's Creed 3. So you just experience more. Now, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Yeah. And I would say there's another kind of entertainment that I used to pursue a lot or follow a lot, that a lot of people don't, and that is cartoons. And that taught me a lot as well, but that is very comparable to any other like cinema or reality show that you're watching. That's basically like dumb things happening in front of you, and some of it you find funny. So I'm not going to defend it much. It's just that I was interested in that. Now, coming back to video games, video games taught me about the history of French Revolution, the history of American Revolution. There was one Assassin's Creed made in India as well. So you get to see a little bit of Indian Revolution as well. But that was a kind of, I think, 2.5D. So most people did not play it. And I also got to learn a lot about World War II. And I played Call of Duty World of Wars, I think, the one in 2008. And that taught me a lot. Viktor Reznov, man, who does not love that character? And then recently they made another, Call of Duty World War II, which most of the people hated just because there was a World at War, or World of War, that 2008 one. But I think that new one was fantastic as well. Well, they cannot do a lot of stuff that they were able to get away with back before, like, 12 years ago or so. Like, they can't even show swastikas in a lot of countries. So they'll be releasing the same game in a different manner in different countries, and some countries are not cool with it. So the swastika will be replaced with an iron cross or something. Okay, but you see, you get to learn a lot from video games, and I think that this is not what you get to do with PUBG or those kind of online video games. There's always a replacement for PUBG. I know that it's banned now in India, but I know Indians, they're resilient, they'll find another way out. And even if they can't, something else will turn into PUBG, like Instagram turned into TikTok. So yeah, video games are good, man, and I'm always for it. If you play video games, you get to know more about the world. But here's this aspect of video games that most people do not look at. Like, people who grew up playing video games a lot, if they stick at, or if they choose anything other than video games, if they choose to do anything other in their life other than video games, they stick to that as well. Because now they know that if they keep at it, they are going to get success sooner or later, because that's what is embedded deep in their subconscious. Like, I press re-entry, I fail again. I press re-entry, I fail again. I press re-entry, and this time I made it. Sometimes, gamers know this, a lot of times we even invest like 50 to 100 crazy amount of attempts. I don't think that any other activity will cause you to invest that much amount of attempts to succeed at anything. But video games, like, for example, what's that video game? Super dark one, Dark Souls, right? That's brutal, man. That will require you to attempt even like hundreds and hundreds of times to defeat a single boss. So you are gamers, for one thing they know for sure is that I keep on attempting, I keep on getting better at this, and that there's always a very micro level of improvement, but they see it. And another thing that they understand is that sometimes I performed well. Let us say there's a boss that you're fighting, and this time you fought him till his blood is depleted to 20%. You attempted again. This time you fought him till the blood is depleted to 30%. So you did worse. But that does not mean that you're getting worse. They understand that it is also about trials. It's also about luck. It is about a lot of variables. And then next time they did it and they defeated the boss. So these are the things that gamers learn subconsciously. Like, even if you see a gamer who's like relentless, okay, a gamer decided to become a mixed martial arts fighter, and he's just relentless, and you ask him, why are you so relentless, bro? And he's like, I don't know, this is just the way that I am. But look what gaming did to that. And you want real life example? Demetrius Johnson, he's a big time gamer. You can see his trips in Twitch streams, and he's like one of the best of all times. Does crazy things in the real time, real life cage situations, right? He was the world champion as well. I do not know if Israel Adesanya is a big time gamer, but he's a big time anime fan. And there are a lot of mixed martial arts fighters who are like big time gamers. So yeah, if a gamer decides to pick something other than gaming, you are going to see that same ruthless amount of relentless attempts in other things as well, because gaming has taught them that you are going to improve the more number of repetitions you give it. All right, so you get what I'm saying, man? Play more video games. No, not that. Like, obviously, it's up to you. But don't judge people who play video games. I think that they are smarter than they get credit for. And also, the more I speak, I might be a little bit more sleepy because it's late. And the worst part is that tomorrow I have to wake up at 5 o'clock. So it's already 1 o'clock. So fuck my sleep, right? I'm not going to get more than 4 hours of sleep. But it's fine because I'll be traveling for 5 hours and most likely I'll be sleeping. And that's the reason why I'm recording, double recording, on the same day, because I'll be traveling and I want the podcast to be coming regularly. I consider that as my job, sir. So I'm not going to mess with it. Okay, so yeah, to conclude it all, the gamers learn more about the world and also they have this relentless attitude. I don't think that you can be a gamer, a hardcore gamer, without having a relentless attitude, because that's literally all you do in video games. Nobody just clears level after level automatically. Maybe that's another thing that you learn. Like, it's same for all. It's just that the people who stick around, they are the one who is going to go to the next level. Okay. But with that said, I've seen so many people mess up their career because of video games. And I think the problem is not video games. The problem is online video games, because that's a next level of addiction. And all the things that I talked about, I don't really think that is applicable for online games like Dota, or I don't know much about Dota. I played a couple of times PUBG. But it's mainly like you're getting the experience because of other people around. So I don't think the things that I've talked about is applicable over there or not. But it is actually better than just watching something that is going on an automatic mode, right? But then again, movies and documentaries, nothing down about that, because that also sometimes teaches you a lot. I've learned a lot out of movies, out of documentaries. You can learn out of a lot of things. But gaming is going to require your voluntary involvement no matter what happens. So I'll share some stories so that you do not get only one side. So the boys who were living right next to me and left of me and right of me back in college, they're all like hardcore gamers. Okay, that's what they did all day, all night. And also they did a lot of drugs. Okay, so you cannot really attribute everything to gaming. And few of those like got earbuds and all, barely completed their graduation. So it's a deep rabbit hole as well. It is a real addiction as well. I still remember that I used to play a lot of video games until I was 18, until I got into college. It was crazy, man. I don't even know how many dozens and dozens of hours, or maybe hundreds of hours. Yeah, definitely hundreds, maybe thousands of hours that I have invested into video games when I was supposed to be studying for a better career, right? I was in one side going to ITJ coachings and all, and on the other side playing at least 4 to 5 hours of video games every day. And that was the year of 2010 2011. So you're talking about Skyrim, GTA 4, and there were a couple of other games around that time. Far Cry 3, I guess, at that time, not sure. Maybe Far Cry 3 came later. But there was always abundance of games. And I messed up my career pretty hard, man. Because at that time, nothing relentless. Like, all my relentless attitude was going towards gaming. And I was not studying at all. It's only when I got into my college that I decided to cancel gaming 100%. I decided I won't be touching games. I'm not going to be installing any game on my laptop. Initially, the addiction was very, very difficult to overcome. I'm telling you, this is really an addiction, because I was dreaming of playing video games. That's what I was dreaming of. Like, okay, this is so awesome, man. Like, that whole idea of experiencing different worlds, and also the storyline, the character development, that's addictive. You want to experience more and more. And when I got into college, I knew that the kind of addiction that I'm having, if I let it go, like, I would be one of those boys who got earbuds and all and barely graduated. There's no doubt in that. So I knew that it was like cancel or die. So I just eliminated video games. I still remember I used to play video games only in semester breaks. So you'd be getting somewhere on 7 days of semester break. That's when I would install a game, finish a game real quick. I still remember the games that I used to finish were like Assassin's Creed Black Flags. That's what I finished. And a few other games, I think Dishonored and all, I finished in the semester breaks. And semester break over, video games uninstalled, done. Now I'm not going to touch it for the rest of the semester. And that kind of dialed down. So addiction was slowly and slowly like suppressed. And by the time I was in fifth semester, I was only like maybe going through one game or so. And then I started preparing for GATE. So semester breaks were going 100% towards that. And it completely wiped away. And the next time I played video games was after I got selected in Indian Space Research Organization. I bought a gaming laptop and now I could afford it. So it's fantastic, man, because till now I was only able to, like, maybe if my father is too generous, he's going to buy me a laptop with a graphic card. That's it. And that's what I got in the first semester, and it was running. And then the games kept on getting more and more graphics thirsty. And when I got into ISRO, I started getting like 60,000 rupees a month. And I said, I'm going to buy me a gaming laptop. And that's what I did. This is the laptop that I bought. I don't know if you're able to see it or not. Can I move it? Yes, I can, most likely. Can you see it? Yeah. This is Legion. Okay. And works for me till this date. But now that I have more money, most likely I'm going to buy a better laptop. And that's when I played next. So I completely paused playing video games at least for 3 years. Kept it in a very low frequency for 2 to 3 years after I got into college. And that's the only way I survived studying so much. Otherwise, it was just not possible. I showed you the addiction. I showed you the history. So that was the only way. But you see, if you control that part and take all that energy and attitude towards anything else, for example, I took it and placed it on academics, and I was relentless over there. I don't think if I'd never played video games, I would have stuck around to prepare for ISRO examination 3 times. I don't think so. I would have given up a long time ago. That's what I believe. Might be false, but that's what I truly believe. So I got a better side of video games. So it's almost like an example from a game. So the second part of Prince of Persia is Prince of Persia Warrior Within. Okay. So I'm not going to explain a lot, but that game is related to time traveling. Okay. So the prince travels back in time. Okay. And the first time he travels back in time, the one in the past sacrifices his life to save him. So when he goes in the future, and this is a little bit complicated because he goes in the future and he goes in the past. The past is the future. So that's a little bit of complication of time traveling. But basically the second time, he's supposed to sacrifice himself to save that prince that he was once. Are you getting it? But instead of that, he did not sacrifice himself. He sacrificed that past one. So he did not die because he was saved once. And the next time, he did not die because he did not save his past self. So he was saved both the time. So in that manner, I think that gaming played for me. I do not know if it is clear or not, but in my head, that's how it works. So you see how I think, man? My thinking is also a lot influenced by gaming, and I'm proud of that. I got the better half of it, but to give you a lot of examples, like the people around me, I don't think that I've seen anyone who got that good half. Very few people actually are able to balance. I think if you are a big time gamer and you have a big task in your hand, you have to cut that bullshit out, man, because that is really a bullshit when you have some other task. You cannot be spending like 3 hours, 4 hours playing video games. It's good for you. It's good for developing a mentality. But you have to channelize it. And after I left ISRO, I was playing video games at that time as well. But by now, I was very matured. So at that time, I was playing video games like KSP, Kerbal Space Program. And later on, I played a lot of video games like Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed. I was just buying from Steam because I could afford it. But I was producing videos, right? Regularly uploading podcasts, taking classes, teaching mechanical engineering also for a brief period of time. And I knew how to balance it. Like, okay, play for 1 hour, done. You got the entertainment, you got the experience, you got the adrenaline rush. Great. Now get to the real world and work. That's what you're supposed to do until and unless gaming is all you do. And if gaming is all you do and you're a professional gamer, I'm the shittiest person to give you an advice because I don't have an experience in that. So I believe that I was able to clear the goods and bads of video games. And maybe it gave you a new perspective. And you want to give me a new perspective? Comment sections section is open for you. You can go ahead and put your opinions, maybe your experiences of what it was like for you. If you are not a gamer and you still listen to me for 30 minutes or so talking about video games, you're awesome, man. Thanks a lot. Let me know down in the comment section about that as well. Now, there's a question that I missed out in the last podcast, which I'm going to discuss over here. Please make a detailed video on work-life balance in government jobs and different PSUs. Now, I know where this question is coming from because there was once a consultancy talk that was published as Talk Call Videos where a student was asking about the work-life balance of government jobs. You see me slurring a little bit, that's because I can sleep anytime, but I'm not gonna because I have that relentless attitude because of video games. So, hear me out. So, that video was made in which I talked about, like, even in organizations like Indian Space Research Organization, you don't really see that much work-life balance. And even in government job, this is a common myth. Like, all the government jobs are super easy and you just get paid for doing nothing. And you enjoy your life a lot and you get paid heavy, you get respected heavy, and you don't work as much. Well, who does not want that life? But that's not true. There are few government jobs which are exactly like that. And one example, I might mess it up, but I think Akash Tyagi sir got that as a posting of engineering services. And I think it is Central Water Department or something, CPWT or CWT. Correct me, engineering services aspirant down in the comment section. And even those people who were working will tell you that. There was a teacher of mine once, Ashirya Bansal sir. I think he also took the same. Indian Railways, on the other hand, is brutal on you. I have a lot of friends in Indian Railways and it is super difficult. It is highly demanding. I think they can get a call at any time and they can be called on the field if there's some emergency. A few of my friends are in Delhi Metro, DMRC. I think one of my friends got an All India rank of 1. I don't remember what rank Surjit got. I recently met him. And Surjit once made a video with me. That video is still available. I think we talked about SSCJ, but he was probably DMRC rank 1 or 2 and he's still working. And I went to Delhi Metro to meet him and he was talking about this as well. Like, they can call you on emergency basis basically at any time. If there's a failure, they're just going to be called and you are always supposed to be on your toes. And those jobs that I talked about, like Indian Railways, DMRC, there's no work-life balance. I would say that it is better than a private job, but I think most people will still prefer a private job because of the faster growth in career, living in metropolitan cities, a better life in general, like the quality of life that you're talking about. Basically, the houses that you're living in and the vehicles that you're driving, the kind of food that you're eating, that's what I mean by quality of life, will always be better in metropolitan cities. And most of these IT companies will be placing you in that. So I think a lot of people will still be preferring the private job, even if the workload is a bit higher because of quality of life and faster growth, right? even if the workload is high in those private jobs, the Saturdays and Sundays are yours. Although on the other hand, in Indian Space Research Organization, more often than not, I was called on Saturdays and Sundays to work, and that is extremely common. And if you think that you will be paid anything extra for doing that, you're wrong, my friend. The contractors do get paid extra, but the fixed permanent employees do not get paid anything extra. And so some would say that, oh, it is ISRO, I would happily go on Saturday and Sunday. To them, you have not worked over there yet, so shut up. So even if you love doing that, you can't still say that the work-life balance is great. I know that Department of Atomic Energy scientific officers are relatively happier. Their work-life balance is better. Like at 5 o'clock, they will be going home. A lot of scientists still end up working late at night, but most of the time, that's their choice, right? They want to sit there and work some extra. So it's their choice. You can do whatever you want to do with your life. And like others that I know about is ONGC, right? So one of my friend is in ONGC and he's in that rig kind of thing, right? Do they call it offshore? Basically, you'll have to go to the rig, stay over there for 14 days. They keep on changing it. Sometimes it's 14. Then because of COVID, they changed it a little bit, maybe 20 off, 20 on, something like that. But basically, 2 to 3 weeks straight up, you are not going to be at home. And that's not the worst part, because the worst part is that you won't be having any electronic devices as well. I don't know, maybe because of the threat of it catching fire or something, but you are completely cut off from the rest of the world. And to some people, it's good because the pay is very high. The ONGC pays the maximum amongst all the other government jobs, semi-government, or that means PSU or central government, does not matter. So you don't really know what the work-life balance is going to be like. Like for some people, 14 days on, 14 days off. The 14 days off is a great work-life balance. But some people don't like it because now 14 days they're living on a rig, and then 14 days they're living with their parents. So they might not like it. So they do not get that, now I have a job and now I'm going to get that bachelor's life. So they don't get it. So some people might like it, some people don't. So again, it's a very subjective question. Like it depends on the person that you're talking about. So I can tell you 100% about Department of Atomic Energy and Indian Space Research Organization. Being one man, having two different government job experiences, good enough, I think. Rest I can only share when it comes to my friends. I got this in the comment section in I think that video itself, and that made a lot of sense. Work-life balance depends on the person. And I've even seen CEOs running not a single company but multiple companies and still spending like 5 to 6 hours with their family, having kids, going out on trips. So it depends on the management skill of a person. And a lot of time, like the jobs that I've had, what I've seen is the person who works more is given more workload. So some of my friends were super smart that they would delay the work. I don't think if it is correct or not, but they would delay the work so that they're not like overloaded with work. So if you're super efficient and you finished an 8 hour worth work in 4 hours, you're going to get another 8 hour worth work. So that's how it works in a lot of companies in India. Some of the companies is like, I don't care when you enter, I don't care when you leave, I just care the work to be done. And that always happens in private companies. Government jobs are always having this obligation of 9 to 5. You have to punch in at 9, punch out at 5. And in between, you can be doing nothing, but you have to punch in and punch out. Towards the end of our BARC training school, we had nothing to do because the syllabus was over. Even our departments were allocated where we are going to be posted. But we still had to come to the office or the training school and do nothing because we are being paid by government in the form of stipend. And so we are supposed to be over there for 8 hours. So that's how it works. And like I said, there are a few companies where you will be finding the kind of heaven that you're looking for, but they are very rare. I would say they are like 20% of the jobs. So I hope that answers your question. At the end, I will still say that you will end up getting more time for your family. Okay, that's good. In government jobs, that will happen compared to private jobs. Okay. But what will pinch you all the time is the lower salary over time. Like, you're going to have a family like 5 to 10 years later. And till then, the salary will be always a little bit lesser than private job. And secondly, which is true for most of the government jobs, is the posting. Like, where you are posted. So even if you are having very good salary and all decent according to yourself, and you are having good time to be spent with your family, but you are in a city, let us say Kalpakkam or Sriharikota, and now your kids are supposed to go to school, right? So you're not going to get the best schools over there, right? And this is a real life problem. Like, I'm not saying it from my experience. Obviously, I don't have kids, but I'm saying this by talking to people who had kids. And a lot of times, their full-time job focus becomes on getting a transfer. This is at least true for the jobs that I've had experience with, right? So, that is the reason why, like, a lot of core sector government mechanical jobs have this kind of problem. So, if you are in a very good city, you are actually kind of in the minority. So, yes, you are going to have more work-life balance, but again, work-life balance can be managed, or it depends on your management skills. And also, there are some limitations of government jobs as well. So you will have to decide, like, what you want. Some people just love the serene beauty. Some people are super happy being posted in Kalpakkam. Hey, the beach is there. You're never going to find that clean beach in Mumbai. And there's no pollution, full of greenery, like an appropriate distance from a metropolitan city, and far away from the noise of a metropolitan city. And I love this. A lot of people like decided to, I'm going to take houses over here and I'm going to settle down over here. Even like my batch students, some of them did that. But some, like, I want to get a transfer. I want to crack an exam and get the hell out of here. So it depends on the person, right? So you cannot generalize these things. But me running a generalized podcast, talking to a wide variety of aspirants and students and professionals, I have to talk about all aspects, but I am going to end this podcast, or I'm going to be falling asleep while speaking. But before I do, you need to know about Art of Speaking. Art of Speaking is a course that I've been running for over 2 years now. That course is focused on enhancing your communication skill, and someday you can as well, after speaking for over 5 hours that day at 1 o'clock at night when you're barely awake, can still record a podcast. The link will be down in the description box. All the information is at ashishranjan.com. There will be a special discount specially for Momentum Podcast audience. Check it out. Go over there, register today, and I'm going to see all of you in the course if you choose to be over there. But thank you for listening to my podcast. I'll see all of you in the next one. Till then, bye.